Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, welcome back to In the Pink with Bose and me, Natalie Pinkham. Great to have your company. Thanks for your feedback on Liam Cunningham, a star of the HBO epic fantasy series Game of Thrones and a massive Formula One fan. So great to get his perspective on the sport. And on that theme, we've got a bit of a bumper week when it comes to motorsport, because my next guest is someone truly exceptional. Now, I know I bang on about wishing I could have hours talking to every one of my guests, but it couldn't be more true when it comes to this guy. He was born 2 months premature and as a result has cerebral palsy. He has dealt with that condition with incredible tenacity and just an incredible outlook and attitude on what can be achieved with a disability. He also has a multiple world champion for a big brother. I am, of course, talking about Nicholas Hamilton. Now, he's open and honest and kind and endearing. And I thought all those things about him before I did the podcast, but just chatting to him for an hour confirmed that all the more to me. He really is a terrific guy who I know Lewis is incredibly proud of, as are his parents, Anthony and Linda. Now, he talks about some of their maybe slightly unconventional parenting skills as he grew up. Some of the points he made you may feel a bit uncomfortable about, but it's worth bearing in mind that the end justifies the means, because he has turned out incredibly well. And you have to say that those fairly tough parenting skills have been a major cause of that. So anyway, I'd love to hear your thoughts. He mentions at one point about them having a policy whereby when he fell over as a kid, they didn't pick him up. They left him to pick himself up. Now, obviously, this goes against every instinct of a parent. I know I'm way too much of a softie to be able to do that, particularly if a child has a disability. But as I say, he is robust, good-humoured, kind, ambitious, tenacious, all the things that you would hope for your child. Anyway, I will stop rambling because it is so much more important to hear from him. So here he is, Nicholas Hamilton. Well, listen, lovely to see you. Thank you for joining us in these crazy times. How have you been coping?
Yeah, I've done all right, to be fair. Been very fortunate. I've been spending most of my time at my girlfriend's house, eating all of their food and being around them, which is nice. So it's all about being around people you want to be around. And kept safe. I haven't actually been out for about 2.5 weeks. I'm trying to really stay regimented, because the last thing I want is this virus. And if I can help stay off the back of the NHS, and I think it helps everybody. So, trying to stay regimented and looking after myself.
And am I right in thinking that you are at higher risk having cerebral palsy?
No, I wouldn't say I'm any higher than anybody else. I don't have any breathing problems or anything. There's nothing like that that links to my condition. My condition is literally just physical. It's just my legs. I'm basically treated like an able-bodied person in this respect. my immune system isn't any worse or any more affected than anybody else's. So yeah, pretty much normal.
Well, that is definitely a relief, because I think being in the higher category definitely creates a lot more anxiety and stress. I know my mother-in-law is in the very high risk category because she got cancer, and she just has these waves of anxiety, and it's kind of weird because she should be able to control that, and we try to help her with it, but you can't. Like, you demons start creeping in, don't they? Tell me then specifically about your condition, because I read that there are various elements, versions of it. Essentially, cerebral palsy is a movement disorder, but tell us how it directly affects you.
Yeah, so my condition was created from me being born too much premature. So it was a lack of oxygen to the brain, right or left side, I actually don't know, which basically causes brain damage. So then that affects the movement of my legs. Is there a lot of background sound? Do you want me to leave?
A little bit. That's okay though, don't worry.
Okay. Yeah, I think Sophie's just making some food.
Lovely. But, what's she rustling up?
Yeah, what are you rustling up?
A vegan chicken Caesar salad.
Vegan chicken Caesar salad. Great.
Wouldn't mind a bit of that. I'll be over in 5.
No, I'm not. So. brain damage and just affected the movement of my legs. So initially when I was born, I was told I wouldn't be able to walk, and that my right eye would be severely affected and would deteriorate as I got older. So I was born with a squint, and sort of struggled to understand my condition and what I could and what I couldn't do. So the easy movements from an able-bodied person wasn't possible for me. I couldn't stand up. I couldn't stand up straight. I was always standing on my tiptoes. My legs were always bent. And I was always sort of fighting the spasticity in my muscles, which is what spastic diplegia is all about, which is my form of cerebral palsy. So cerebral palsy affects a load of people in loads of different ways. You can have hemiplegia, which is down one side, diplegia, which is two limbs. Unfortunately, my limbs are my legs that are affected, but everything else from my torso upwards is pretty much, perfect.
And when did your parents first notice that there may be a problem?
But for most able-bodied children, they go through a phase where they start crawling, then they start learning to walk and stand up and stuff. And for me, I wasn't actually developing. When I tried to crawl, I wasn't using alternate legs. I was actually dragging my legs behind me, which was probably the first sign that they realized that there might be something wrong in my development.
And have they been warned that could happen, given what they knew, given that you were premature? Had they been warned that this could be a developmental problem?
I actually don't know. You probably have to speak to them, but I'm guessing the answer's no. And there was a lot of premature babies that don't have any issues. They're fortunate enough to not have any reoccurring issues or any problems growing up. And so I think they took me home after me being discharged and thinking that everything's okay with their newborn. And it was only when they get to this sort of phase where their kid is sort of not progressing, not moving forward and struggling with the basics, where they almost got to go back to the drawing board and think, how the hell do we make a good life for our son when we actually have no idea what he is going to be struggling with or what's going to improve him.
Do you think it's a lot better now? Is it a case of this was quite a long time ago in terms of development in science and the understanding of cerebral palsy? Do you think it's better now?
Well, one thing which is all part of my story, I very rarely look into the condition, into the science of it, into what people are saying about it. I keep myself very separated from cerebral palsy and disability as a whole, and I've always done that. And that for me was always a way of helping me overcome it by surrounding myself with able-bodied people, and not because I was embarrassed about my condition, but more because if I surround myself with an able-bodied mindset, then it would help me overcome the condition as a full. So I haven't actually taken any time to study the condition and be like, right, you know, when I was a kid, people were seeing it this way, or and now, you know, it's improved. I think, you know, for me, my knowledge about cerebral palsy is purely off of my own understanding and of my own experiences. But I feel that I've been through enough and a lot in terms of making a load of mistakes, figuring out what's best for me. I've actually had no help physically to overcome any obstacles, to a point where I feel like I could advise anybody to overcome their condition if they're struggling with it. So all I know now is that there's different operation procedures. When I was a kid and I was 4 years old, I had a life-changing operation, which was a tendon release. So it released the tendons in the back of my hamstrings, back of my ankles, and my groin muscle, or my groin area. And that was because when I was trying to walk and trying to stand up, I couldn't put my heels down first. I was always walking or trying to walk on my tiptoes, and my legs were bent. So if you were to get up now, Nat, really, and try and walk on your tiptoes
and
at the same time.
So try on my tiptoes and do what?
So get on your walk on your tiptoes, yeah. and bend your knees at the same time. Bend your knees, then walk on your tiptoes, and have no relaxed muscle basically at the same time. It's quite difficult for a kid.
You properly tense everything up, don't you?
Yeah.
So does everything go into spasm when you do that then? I bet that's painful very quickly, doesn't it?
Yeah, but it just affects your whole skeleton. So it's like a domino effect. So you're trying to, you know, a kid that's trying to run, for example, with all of this tension and spasticity in his muscles, whilst trying to balance, but not on his foot, he's trying to balance just on his tiptoes with, you know, with bent legs. That's really difficult. So I had an operation when I was four for this tendon release, which now allowed me to put my heels down first and actually straighten my legs. And I believe now, and through the years, there's people that have been telling me, oh, maybe you should have another operation. Things like Botox was an option, where I don't really look into it, but I think they inject your legs or your muscles in your legs with Botox, and it releases that muscle for 6 months. So you feel better and you probably walk better. But then after 6 months, you just deteriorate again. And I was like, well, what's the point of that? So I didn't do that. And then I went to the Mayo Clinic in America. And actually, Ron Dennis, big shout out to Ron on this one. He was the reason why I went out there. He actually supported my treatment to go and get an MRI scan and go into the detail of my condition a little bit more. But the Americans, they're a bit over the top, and they decided the only way to improve me was to break both of my femurs and then reset them in a way that would then straighten my legs more. And I turned around and said, well, that doesn't my condition doesn't really affect me enough for me to be able to make that sort of judgment and decision. So I learned a lot in that scenario, but I didn't take that. But now they have.
How old were you then?
I would have been 2000 and I would have been about 14.
14.
Yeah, 14.
It's a big ball for a 14-year-old to make, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, all the way through my life, I've been trying to make sure that my condition doesn't affect me. So I would always try and play football, and I struggled to kick a ball, but I used to love playing football. Or I would always love to play rugby, and you know, because even though I was always running slow or whatever, I was never afraid of falling over and getting trampled on. So I just tried to keep myself mobile, and it didn't really matter if people were bullying me about it or anything like that. It's something that I knew that I needed to do for myself.
Hang on,
and so when you're yeah, no.
Don't gloss over that one. How? What?
Well, first of all, I've completely like poo-pooed your structure. I'm sure you had a load of questions you had to ask me, and I'd answer them. But I'm just going off on one as always.
I love it.
But yeah, I mean, kids are brutal, aren't they? So they always, there's always a chance for you getting bullied, and I was in a. When I finished primary school, I went into a wheelchair for secondary school because there was a lot of walking to do, and you know, carrying the heavy books on your back on your back every day, walking from, you know, the science block to the design technology block and to the English block, and having to be there on time is something I never had to deal with when I was in primary school, because you're all in one place for all of your lessons. And so I went into a wheelchair. I thought it was a really good idea. And through that period of time of sort of being in a wheelchair, I was, you know, bullied in that period of time with people pulling me backwards and, you know, leaving me there laughing and walking off, all that sort of stuff. And I just knew in myself that the only way to, you know, continue to get better is to learn everything on my own. And but yeah, to answer your last question, was there's now SDR, which is an operation that cuts the nerves in the spine that then releases the spasticity of the muscles, so you're less tense and stressed, I would say, when walking. Initially, when I was a kid doing your operation, they only operated on, you know, young people, because it's good to get it early, and then through the growth spurt, you know, they don't tighten up again. Whereas this SDR, it can actually be operated on people that are, you know, 50 odd. So it's still an option for me if I actually wanted to look at it. And I actually was thinking about it a couple of months ago, but I said my answer was, well, what if I was to do it and then not be able to race my car? I think that'd be the worst thing ever. So
we'll come on to your racing career soon, but just to go back to the bullying thing, because it just, you know, riles me, and I'm sure it does anyone, many other people listening. How did you deal with it at the time, and were you, I mean, you're clearly a very strong person, and I love the fact that it was a conscious decision of yours growing up not to let your condition define you. Hopefully you've been able to channel all that negative energy of the bullying to something positive, but God, that can't have been easy.
Yeah, I mean, well, firstly, my parents are, they're hard nuts. Especially my dad, for example, he's, explain him like a chocolate fondant, hard on the outside, soft in the middle type of character. And for him, you know, he never wanted me to struggle and always wanted me to fight my own battles. And, he would never give me the easy option or the easy route. And the same with my mum, really. If I sort of fell over, my mum, which is kudos to them, because if you're a disabled son falls over and he's sort of hurt himself, my mum actually wouldn't come running to pick me up. She would almost let me pick myself up and understand why I fell over, really. And so it was already building my mental strength up around my condition, to where my mum was always like, Nick, stop falling over. Nick, you know, keep your legs straight and keep doing this and keep doing that. And so I had all of this going on, that bullying, when it happened, it was like small fry in comparison. It was actually my brother that I went to when I first started struggling, you know, thinking, you know, Lewis, what do I do? You know, I've got these kids now just taking the mick out of me, being in my wheelchair. And his answer was that I just need to continue to be myself. And he said, well, if people are laughing at this wheelchair that you're in, for example, why don't we make it cool and do some cool things in it? So he taught me how to like do wheelies and stuff in the wheelchair, and I almost became like a Tony Hawk the skateboarder. I sort of became that in my wheelchair. I started like jumping stairs and stuff and trying to be cool in that way, and that sort of just helped me through it. But then I realized that, you know, these bullies, they're just bullies. They're not really anybody that you should sort of worry about, and they're not going to be in my life forever. So it's just how you sort of deal with it. But for me, it was a character building moment. So, you know, I'm glad I went through it.
Amazing. Sounds like your mum had a real shift. You mentioned to me earlier that there was a time where she blamed herself for your condition, that if there's something she could have done differently in her pregnancy. It sounds like she's been on a journey of her own to be able, because, God, she must have had to fight every instinct in her not to rush and pick you up. You do that with an able-bodied kid, let alone, you know, and that must have been tough. So she's gone on her own journey through all of this.
100%. You know, my mum is, she's like an unsung hero. She, you know, you don't know much about her. She keeps herself to herself. And even to the point where I've never spoken to her about, oh, mum, you know, how was it bringing me up? And what did you do? What did you struggle with? And stuff. She never complained once. She just got on with it and made me feel so secure in everything that if my mum was strong enough, I would feel strong enough in everything that I did. And for her to, I think she didn't tell me, it's when I was older, she told me that she sort of blamed herself for my condition, which obviously isn't her fault at all in the slightest. It's just one of those things. You know, I love my mum to bits. She's like my left arm. If I didn't have her, I don't know where I would have been by now. But yeah, she deserves someone to at least ask her those questions, because she's, you know, I'm just telling the story from my side, but if it wasn't for her and for my dad and their mental strength, you know, I wouldn't be as strong as I am today. So I think my mum has a totally different outlook or story to tell. But she's very shy when it comes to talking like that.
She's a lovely woman, that's for sure. Obviously, yeah. Quite a big age gap between you and Lewis. How did it work in terms of growing up? Because a lot of attention was having to shift onto his career from a very young age, but a lot to deal with you. So were you living together full time as brothers, or because you're half brothers, was he splitting his time with his mum? How did it work?
No, so yeah, we are half brothers. But from all I remember is Lewis lived with me and my mum and our dad. So it was us four in the house. And that was how it always was. You know, Lewis is what, nearly 8 years older than me. He acts 8 years younger most of the time. but yeah, he's 8 years my elder, or seven and a bit. And yeah, I mean, life wasn't meant to be about motorsport. We never planned to do motor racing, and we never planned to now be at the top of the food chain within motorsport. But at the time I was growing up, it was to focus now on Lewis's career. It was all about him, and I had no jealousy. I wasn't worried. I just was a part of the family, and whatever my family were doing, you know, I would support. And so there was no bad blood. There was nothing. We just got on really well, like a house on fire as always. And it just gets more difficult as, you know, time goes on. We initially just ended up being, or started out just being a normal black family wanting to race go-karts. And then it got to a point where we're now, or Lewis got more well known, which then put the Hamilton family in more of a spotlight. So then you have to be careful what you say, who you put yourself around. And then that, you know, has an effect on, you know, what you do on a daily basis. So it was never planned. It just, you know, snowballed.
Yeah, I mean, you say never planned, but you guys have got incredible tenacity, application. I wonder in a way whether the focus being on Lewis, as you said, and just a genuine love between you two, which, by the way, you can always see, there's just such a natural, I don't know, energy between you two. He, like, I just see his whole face change as soon as he sees you, which is just lovely. He often praises you and credits you for sort of keeping his life in perspective. But I wonder, in a way, with the focus being on him, whether that took the pressure off you in a way with your condition to, like, to grow up on your own terms. Do you think that's fair?
No, I mean, I was never under pressure. I just had to, it was all to do it for myself, really. You know, it's my parents wanted the best for me. And I'm sure, you know, you being a parent yourself, Nat, that a parent can only wish something on for their child. It's actually up to their child to make it happen. and their child has their own wishes that they would like to do or focus on, or dreams they want to focus on. And at the time, I wasn't all about overcoming my condition. Mm. My parents just wanted a life for me that, you know, wasn't that difficult, considering that I was born already in a difficult situation. It wasn't until I was, you know, 15 and I'd gone through all these bullies and situations and stuff where, you know, I explain it. When you get to 15, you sort of start growing into yourself. You know, start liking girls and wanting to go out to with your mates, and you know, whether that's just on the street corner or you want to go to a party or something like that. And I was just struggling with the usual or normal things to do. And
what, I made in a decision of movement, or
in what? Yeah, because it was like, well, to bring Nick to a house party, does the house have a ramp for a start? And the answer is no. So then, okay, so then what do I do? So then it's okay. So then I go into a house party and there's, you know, 50 people in there. Is there room for my wheelchair to sit in there? Probably not. Okay. So the only way for me to actually fit in with my group of friends is if I was to get rid of my wheelchair and be able-bodied, or try and be able-bodied, or try and overcome it. But it wasn't so I could just go out and go partying. It was because I just wanted to start fitting in and realize that my condition was pulling me back. And so the only way I could do it was not through my parents telling me. It was actually just by me buckling it up and, you know, doing it myself.
Amazing. Do you, you mentioned actually earlier about the squint that you developed in your eye. So how much is your eye affected? How is your vision?
So my vision is fine.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The easiest way to explain it is my right eye's there. I just don't use it. I just realize I don't use it. I naturally use my left eye and realize that I only use my right eye when I want to look to the right. but the vision in it is totally, totally fine and as good as my left. It's just a lazy eye and only lazy because I guess I don't use it. And when I was a kid, my parents put an eye patch on my left eye so that I could only use my right eye and try and strengthen it up. But as you're a kid and you start growing up, you take it off and you can't.
You don't want to look like a pirate, so you take it off.
Yeah, so you know, it only became a problem when I wanted to start racing cars, really, through my eyesight and condition generally. But my right eye, I don't even really notice I have it. It's just you only notice it more when I'm tired or having a picture taken. You know, my eyes aren't always straight, or my left eye will be looking at you, but my right eye won't be.
I find it interesting that there are so many varying degrees of cerebral palsy. I've got a friend who's got 11-year-old boys, because it can happen when you have twins. One is severely affected, and one is just every so often, like maybe when he gets more tired, you can see it in his walking. Is it something then when you were growing up that you thought other issues might start creeping in, or did you know from quite an early age the extent of the disability?
So put it this way, I would say I'm very, very, very fortunate because I am basically an able-bodied person from the inner workings of my body, from my torso upwards. I'm not allergic to anything. I don't have asthma. I don't have any of these, you know, problems that potentially could be linked to your condition. You know, if I went to the doctors and they said, you know, do you suffer from this? Do you suffer from that? Do you suffer from this? I would just tick it all off and say no, because I literally don't. The only thing I have is this physical disability with my legs, but nothing else. So growing up, I didn't know the severity of it. Because in my head, it never stopped me from doing anything. So it wasn't severe. It was just a bit of a pain, you know, because one day your legs would want to work, and then the next day they don't. So you might be able to walk, you know, a couple of meters one day and then not be able to walk at all. You know, you wake up in the morning and they feel super stiff and they don't want to do anything.
Okay, time for Bose's handy tips about how we can all cope a bit better over the next few weeks and potentially months under lockdown. I think that's part of the problem, isn't it? We just don't know how long this is going to last, and that lack of control over our own lives can let anxiety creep in. But hopefully, if we can all follow these little nuggets of advice, it may just help. Okay, first of all, take time for yourself to stay centred and sane. Number two, seize moments of calm. They may be few and far between, but they are out there. You just need to grab them with both hands. Number three, find your sanctuary away from the chaos. Now, if like me, your whole house is chaotic, then that might be hard, but there must be a little corner somewhere where you can take yourself off and just have a moment or two. Because remember, timeouts aren't just for kids. It's really important to take a little me time, because it can go a long way. I know that sounds a bit selfish, because I always feel guilty
if I go off and read a book or listen to some music or have a bath or all three at the same time. But I think and hope that we all come back to our jobs in the house with the kids, with our family, as better mothers, better partners, more productive, if we have taken a bit of time out. Cabin fever is real. So one way to smash that oppressive feeling is to learn something new. Take up a new hobby, for example. Don't resist and fight the new norm. Embrace it. Shape it to suit you. For example, you could move rooms, change the layout at your home, create a new space dedicated to your new hobby. Make working for home work for you. Don't be afraid of the silence. If indeed it exists at any point during your day, it can be truly golden after all. Try to block out unhelpful noise, and that will also reduce your anxiety. It's not where you work, it's how you work. So make it work for you with a little bit of help from Bose. Feel more, do more, be more with Bose.
So what are your pain levels on a day-to-day basis?
I don't have pain in my legs as much anymore. And to be fair, most pain that I used to feel, I'm so used to it that I don't even know it's there anymore. So I couldn't actually tell you. One thing that is for sure is you know, my ribs. If my ribs aren't in place, then I can feel it's almost like an aching pain constantly throughout. It's like someone pushing on your back with their knuckle, for let's say, constantly. My legs-wise, I don't feel any pain. They only start to ache when you walk long distances or do a lot of exercise or movement. But then it's just little silly things, like not picking up your feet and stubbing your toe, and now you've cut your toe or you've cut this or you've cut that, and it just creates annoying cuts and bruises that you don't really need.
So let's talk about British touring cars.
Yeah. I
mean, quite incredible. I know that, again, you don't want your condition to define you, but to be the first disabled driver in British touring cars is phenomenal. Tell us about the process. Tell us about when you made the decision. Because I remember you coming on the F1 show at Sky. Do you remember when you came into the studio all those years ago?
Yeah.
Talking about doing it. And tell us about the process of deciding that was your ambition, getting your racing license, doing the training, modifying the car, just how much had to go into it.
A lot went into it. I always wanted to race, always. As soon as I learned about the sport and watching my brother all these years, I wanted to race. And my dad actually gave me an opportunity when I was 7. He got a little cadet car from a friend that he borrowed. And he said, right, Nick, this is your time. We're going to take you to a car park where there's nothing that you can hit. And I had all Lewis's like gear on. Lewis was sponsored by McLaren at the time, so he wasn't in Formula One. I was only 7 years old, so I would say he was probably at the top of the UK at this time, but sponsored by McLaren. So had a Lewis Hamilton van and everything. But instead of going racing for him, we were sort of going for me. So it was an exciting time. And yeah, we went to this car park. It was absolutely huge, especially when you're 7 years old and you're quite low down. And my dad, there was a little ramp that went into the car park, and my dad decided he wanted to do a little brake test. So he said, right, Nick, I'm just going to push you down, you know, left foot's brake, right foot's go, hit the brake pedal and get the car to stop. And I basically, I hardly stopped. It just sort of rolled to a halt. So my dad was like, oh, that's good enough. So he pulled the engine starter and started me up. And he said, Nick, just go in a figure of eight, you know, turn in one direction, come back, turn another direction and keep going. So it was like the first time I've ever driven anything. And I was sort of doing it. I was so happy with myself until I actually didn't come back round one time and ended up hitting this curb and disappearing down like a 6-foot drop. And it was because I couldn't brake, which my dad would have noticed if he had done the brake test properly. But it's because the brake pedal is so much harder or stiffer than the accelerator. And my legs weren't developed enough to be able to hit that brake pedal. So I ended up disappearing down this drop, and I had 6 inches of water, but my engine was still running. Fortunately, I was, the right way up, and everything was still okay. But that was it. It was no racing for me.
Was your mum there at the time?
Yeah, mum was there too. Crazy. Yeah, hair was all over the place. She was crapping herself. but yeah, it was. So that was my first time of experiencing motorsport, and that was it. It was like done. We're not putting Nick into a race car, and then I just obviously kept following Lewis, and I got massively into gaming and sim gaming and all sort of stuff, and all I was doing was racing games, and long story short, I became UK number one on sim gaming, which is now esports, but it wasn't esports back then. It was proper old school. And then my dad decided to put me in Clio Cup and stuff. I don't know how much detail you want me to go into that, but I never knew I'd ever be able to drive a road car, let alone a race car. So when my dad said, you're in the Clio Cup, it's a step down from British Touring Cars, and I hadn't done karting or anything like that. And the first thing was being able to be strong enough to hit that brake pedal and accelerate within tenths of a second. So when I started training, my legs weren't strong enough to even push 20 kilos on a leg press. So I didn't know how the hell I was going to be able to push a brake pedal of a race car, even a Clio Cup car. And long story short, I got to a point I could push 120 kilos with my left leg just before my first race. So I only had 2 months to prepare. And
was that just a lot of training in the gym, just trying to strengthen the legs?
Yeah, it was just a lot of dedication. It's always what I wanted to do, and my dad finally gave me the opportunity to, so I didn't want to waste it. But my dad didn't give me any practice or testing or anything, so I just pretty much went into my first race not knowing anything. To get my race license, it normally takes an able-bodied person 2 weeks. It took me the full 2 months that I had to get it. I was put through a lot of tests, generally from the MSA, being can you get up and down and in and out of cars, and are you going to be a danger to the rest of the grid? And you can see you've got a squint, and does that affect you, and all that sort of stuff. And then I started my first season, and then the BBC followed me for my first documentary. So the pressure was massive, and it just snowballed, and it got to a point where I, a lot of people were making their judgments about me being Lewis's brother and having all the funding in the world, and that's the reason why I was there and stuff. And, then I went to 2012, which was my second season in Clio's, and I went from right at the back of the grid in 2011, struggling, even though it was just my first year, to qualifying top six on a grid of 24 drivers that had been driving for 10, 15 years before me. So I knew I sort of had what it takes. I just don't have the foundation and the nurture that I needed. It was very last minute for me, but then straight away I'm in under the spotlight. So it was really difficult. And then after 2012, my dad decided that the only way for me to continue to race was to, if I was to do it myself. So I had no funding or help from him, and all of the sponsors that were helping Lewis pretty much in Formula One, they all let me go at the end of 2012. So
why?
You asked me, I don't know, you tell me.
To sort of help you find your own way? Is it possible that your dad told them to?
No, I don't know, because I knew nothing about sponsors at that time. I knew nothing about sponsors. All I wanted to do is race my car. So I didn't think about the money that was involved in it and what it actually took to get me there. I just drove. But I didn't I didn't waste it. Like, I appreciated it. I didn't understand the sponsor side of things. So, you know, I had really, really good sponsors, Vodafone and Reebok and Tag Heuer, and they're all sponsors of Lewis's. But so then after 2012, I went from, you know, feeling like I was a racing driver for 2 years to absolutely nothing. And it was like, well, what now? What do I do? And how do I get on the grid myself without the help of my dad and everything like that? And it just goes back to, my dad could have helped me in so many ways in my condition in helping me, but he decided not to. And I don't know whether that's that, I don't know what that is, but it's made me who I am today. So it's given me strength. So it's such a long answer now, obviously, about touring cars, but but it's a big story to why I then went to touring cars. And it was because I was struggling to get back on the grid, and the only way to do that was to be in the limelight and the biggest championship in the UK, and to create my own brand in my own right. And I wanted to do that through touring cars. So I only raised like a little bit of the budget, and then I actually, all of my own savings that I'd saved up for years and years, I put into touring cars myself for that. And and I only did four rounds. I only did four rounds in 2015. And then I didn't do anything in 16, 17. I went back to Clio's, and I was just struggling generally to raise this money to go motorsport racing, which is what I felt like I was put on the planet to do, because using my motorsport would help inspire people moving forward, but also help me strengthen my condition. So I knew I had to do it. And then you've got all these people in the world saying that I'm only there because my brother helps me, but he wouldn't realize. So it's a difficult scenario. I made a decision to get back into touring cars, and I finally did that through the support of Rocket, being my title sponsor, and you know, pretty much saving my career. And I did that through meeting them, I just put an email together and just was honest, and they loved me, and fortunately they continue to like me, and here we are today, and I'm in my second year of touring cars. New team, new car, but the same goal. Hopefully eventually I'll get to where I want to be, which is at least stand on the podium of a touring car championship race, which I believe I can do. It's just going to take a bit of time.
So you were confirmed in February of this year, again, as you say, for the fourth team hard drive driver. Is that right?
Yeah.
I suppose you have no idea when you're actually going to get to go racing. What is were it not for coronavirus, what would the schedule have been?
So we would have already been one round in. So it would have been on my birthday first round, which was 28th of March.
Happy birthday, by the way.
Yeah, no worries. Thank you. I was so excited to actually race on my birthday because it's the first time.
And you spent it in isolation instead.
I spent it in isolation, believe it or not. It was on my birthday, and then the second round would have been this weekend coming at Brands Indy. Everything's put on hold at the moment, but you know, it's all for the right reasons, and there's a lot of people that are in worse situations and scenarios as we are. So, I'm just glad to have been able to put it all together to be racing again. And I just want to make sure that I sort of make the most of it this year. But British Touring Car Championship's so tough, so difficult. So many good drivers on the grid, and the cars are so close. But it is important to be in the right equipment. And you look at Team Hard, and they're not necessarily renowned to be a quick car. But I have a lot of belief in them as a team. I think they have a lot of potential to really grow and be a top team, and that's why I agreed to sign with them this year. I have very loyal partners, and I believe I'm an honest individual. So if I remain honest and decent, hopefully people will treat me the same and help me on my journey to achieve what I want to achieve. But yeah, I mean, without my motorsport, my condition wouldn't be as strong as it is today, and I don't think my mentality wouldn't be as strong as it is today. So that's why my motorsport means so much to me, because it gives me a reason to get up in the morning. Because if I sort of didn't really have that, I really didn't know what I'd focus on.
That's fantastic. I tell you what, your parents have clearly made decisions that go against a parent's instinct, but have shaped you in such an incredible way. I mean,
yeah, this is the thing. You see,
it would have been so much easier, really, to always pick you up when you fell, to always just give you the handouts that you needed, to not prove to you that getting sponsorship and sustaining a motorsport career is bloody hard. But because, you know, your brother is a six-time world champion, and it's, you know, it hasn't come easily to him. He's worked bloody hard for it, hasn't he? Yeah,
exactly that. And so, I mean, kudos to my parents. You know, I went through periods of time in my life being like, wow, they're really making things difficult. But you know, if they didn't do things in a certain way, honestly, it wouldn't have worked so well for me. You know, just to the general stuff of, you know, I live in my apartment completely independent, you know, and I can carry a knife and walk around with it and they're not worried about me falling over and stabbing myself and all that stuff. You know, just carrying a bowl of cereal and without spilling it, you know, just the everyday stuff you struggle with, the condition. If they didn't put all this into me, you know, I wouldn't be as independent as I am. So that's I guess what they plan to do, and hopefully I've, you know, making them proud in what they've created.
Yeah, God, absolutely.
In the Pink and Bose really want to help during this lockdown. Now, whether we can or not is another question, but we can try, and we're going to do that by giving away some more Bose noise cancelling headphones. To win them, just share mini anecdotes from your time in lockdown and give us some feedback on this series. Always put in the hashtag Bose and tag in a couple of mates to do the same, and you never know, those headphones could be yours. Good luck, stay safe, and stay connected.
And in terms of how much time you're able to spend with Lewis now, obviously he doesn't live on your doorstep anymore, doesn't live in the same house as you anymore, but you do sometimes come to races. I know we haven't had any yet this season, but just describe how you do support each other, because it's definitely, it goes both ways, doesn't it?
Oh, for sure. And you know, with relationships, with family, it always ebbs and flows. You can get things that you agree with, things you don't agree with, things you fall out on, things you don't fall out on. And me and Lewis, especially in our situation where we can't really hang out that often, it's important that we are on the same sort of wavelength, but realize that it's okay to have differing opinions. And you know, he's very supportive in me and what I want to achieve and what I want to do. Sometimes it's difficult for him to see it, but he's, you know, understands it more and more as time goes on. And you know, with me, with regards to Lewis, I'm his biggest fan. He has thousands and millions of fans across the world, but no one is as big a fan of him as I am. And if anybody wants to challenge me, then I'll take them on that one. But yeah, he, I don't think he realizes, you know, how much he means to me. I'm so proud of him. And you know, to see where he's come from, you know, from being just a poor black kid, with actually not much going for him, to now be, you know, known as one of the most influential sporting athletes, not just in the UK but in the world, means so much to me that he's been able to achieve that. And I still can't believe that he's doing that because, you know, who are we to have this sort of effect on people? You know, we're just a general normal family, and remember the days of, you know, Carters and kids wearing Michael Schumacher helmets, and whenever you asked a kid down the road and said, you know, what do you want to do when you're older, and they say you want to be the next Michael Schumacher, we were like, oh yeah, it's cool. But now it's, I want to be the next Lewis Hamilton, and you see helmets of Lewis, you know, going around the circuits, and it's just, you know, different kids just being involved in motorsport, and now different colours and creeds involved in motorsport. And I purely feel that it's down to Lewis's impact on the sport. And everybody knows Lewis, that he, you know, wears his heart on his sleeve, and that he, you know, went through a period of time where he would say stuff that made mistakes, and you know, some people liked, some people hated, and whatever. But he's now become a very grounded individual, to where he's very respectful with all the decisions he makes. And yeah, I'm honestly so proud of him, and I can't believe that he's going for his 7th world title. You know, we would have just been grateful just to get one, you know, especially in that 2008 Brazil finale. One would have been enough, but the bloody bugger's gone and done 6, which is incredible. So yeah, I'm so proud of him. And I could talk about him forever because my life has evolved around him, but not through hateful eyes, just pure proudness isn't a word, but from pride. From pure pride. So yeah.
Do you ever feel frustrated when he gets unduly criticised? Because I feel that sometimes he's a bit misunderstood, and he does a hell of a lot behind the scenes that a lot of people don't know about, which he could shout from the rooftops about, but he doesn't. I think there's, as you say, millions of fans all around the world, but I think he should be knighted. I know that we're biased because we're in Formula One, but his list of achievements is astonishing. And sometimes I feel that he gets pigeonholed and criticised unfairly. Would you agree with that?
I'm a true believer in everybody's open to or free to have their opinion and their own say. You know, because if everybody thought the same thing, the world would be boring. You're always going to, you know, to get people that always want to pull you down a couple of pegs. And that is, sometimes it could be true, and you can applaud them for that. And then other areas or reasons could be just purely, you know, unjust and not really deserved. You know, and I get just the same, you know, so going into touring cars, for example, I only get signed for a team and people have a go at me for it. So it's just the way the world is. And I think it doesn't actually matter how successful you are or not. People are always going to try and pull you down if they feel that they need to. So Lewis, or with Lewis, you know, he only needs to stay true to himself. And he knows he's not done everything perfect, and it's impossible to do that because no one is perfect. And especially in his world, you know, everything he does, as soon as he walks out of the front door, you know, he can be criticized for it. But he's learned how to deal with that, and he's become very strong in knowing what is right and what is wrong. I trust him so much and believe him so much with what he does, or believe in him so much in what he does, that I'm not worried about it. And if people want to, you know, put him down about certain things, that's their choice. We just know who we are, and deep down I know who he is, and all these guys that you know, want to spring negativity on us and the Hamilton family as a whole. My answer is, well, they don't know where we've come from to be where we are today. So that's all we need to keep in ourselves and be proud of ourselves. And we're not actually doing it for anybody else, but ourselves, to be fair. Lewis is racing for himself, and he wanted to make achievements, and he wanted to focus on his goal, and he wasn't expecting the fame from it, which is one of the stars.
And I guess you're right, it has come with the territory, unfortunately. There's that level of scrutiny, and it's just a shame. I mean, I suppose you just always have to remind yourself it's a projection of others when they get critical. Back to you, where now for you? And as you say, you have come a long way. Whether you and your brother meant to or not, you are both role models in your different ways, and that's incredible. And as you say, you've had a lot of adversity along the way. So what is next for you? What are your goals? If we're doing another podcast in a year's time, what do you want to be talking about?
In a year's time, well, my first port of call was always to have a sustainable motorsport career, was my thing. I really believe I have what it takes to to be running, in the good positions and getting good results within British Touring Cars. And I did that last year from my first race at Brands Hatch. I hadn't driven the car in the wet, for example, before, and I had a goal of being in the top 20 out of 30. We know it's so hard to even get in the top 20 in touring cars, and I qualified top rookie, and I went from 20th to 11th in the first couple of corners, and I was in the mix. And that belief for me has never deteriorated. So my first port of call is to have a sustainable career in motorsport and in touring cars. And year after year after year, if I can keep staying in the championship, I'll only get stronger and stronger, and get to a point where I do stand on the podium. Actually, at the moment, I don't care what position that is. I think it would be hilarious, the fact that I wouldn't actually be able to get up on the podium, and that I would have to ask for a helping hand from the guy that I'd just beaten to get up there or something.
I want to see.
Yeah, sorry, bud. Do you mind just helping me up to the top step? That'd be really, really helpful, because I actually can't get up there. Yeah, so that's my first port of call. And so my life completely revolves around my motorsport. At the same time, I do a lot of public speaking. So I, speak for different companies and, try and, people say I'm inspirational. I just do me. It's do what I do, and I never plan to be inspirational, or don't necessarily feel like I am. I'm just me, and I just tell my story and actually enjoy telling it, because no one tells it better than myself. And I'm sort of proud of what I've achieved, but yeah, I mean, in terms of my motorsport career, there's so much more I want to do, and I don't feel like I've achieved nowhere near enough, and pretty much haven't achieved a lot, I would say. That's me being critical about myself, but a lot in my motorsport career. So I want to really now continue to develop myself, so that this time next year, when we do have a podcast, I can tell you that I had some decent results, and that I'm signed for the year after and the year after that. And I've got something to focus on, because I'll only get stronger.
What about esports? You could take part in this championship that's running at the moment. You'd be one, wouldn't you?
Yeah, well, I actually did the virtual, the first round of the virtual esports in Bahrain.
Yeah.
And that was fun. That was fun. It was just a bit carnage. That's the thing.
Herbert's fault, wasn't it, that it became carnage?
Yeah, he cut the whole first corner, so he went from like back of the grid to P1. But good for him. Esports is obviously, especially at a time like this, is really picking up, and the guys that are on it, they're very, very good. They're very good, and in some cases, it's like harder than driving in real life, because it's not 100% realistic, and so your mindset changes a little bit. So Johnny Herbert wouldn't have been cutting the chicane and when he was back in his Formula One days. But you can get away with it in a game because there's no fear factor attached to it, or any financial problems or anything that could, you know, if you make a mistake or take the guy out next to you, there's so much at risk in real life. But you know, it's a great way to keep everybody sane within motorsport who is in quarantine right now. So I never say no to it.
Well, look, Nick, you enjoy telling your story. I've certainly enjoyed listening to it. Thank you so much for your time. You're a legend.
No worries. Did you learn any more? Anything more than obviously we've known each other for a while.
Yeah, I learned loads more, but I just think I just get a greater sense of who you are as a person. You just speak so openly and honestly. It's lovely to hear. And I love sort of imagining and piecing together your childhood and the influence your parents and Lewis have been on you, which is phenomenal. Because as you say, you are as you are because of all of that.
Yeah. And my last thing is probably my brother never let me win anything. So yeah, if it was a running race or anything like that, he would always pretend that I was getting close to beating him, but then he would beat me at the end always. So it was always, you know, Nick, you need to keep pushing, keep pushing, keep pushing, keep striving, keep pushing, keep striving. And it's just built up into my mentality to continue doing what I'm doing. So that's why I never give up.
Amazing. Well, you are an inspiration, whether you mean to be or not. So thank you.
No worries. Yeah. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Nick. Thank you for your time. Thank you for sharing your story. Now, if I'm completely honest, it's a story that I thought I already knew, but it wasn't until I heard him put it into his own words that I think I fully appreciated and respected all that he's gone through and continues to go through in pursuit of his dream. And it's interesting because it gives context to Lewis's achievements as well. It gives a kind of framework of understanding as to all the sacrifices the Hamilton family have had to make over the years and the decisions, often hard ones, that they've taken in order to fully realise that dream as a family. So, fantastic stuff and a brilliant insight into the world according to Hamilton. And we've got another Formula One friend coming up later this week, a guy called Matt Bishop, who may not be a household name, but he's certainly someone that has been right at the centre of all things Formula One for many, many years. And he now works for the W Series. He's got some great anecdotes to share with you on In the Pink. So that is coming later this week. Don't forget, you can still win those Bose noise cancelling headphones, which quite frankly we could all do with at the moment. So just give us a bit of an insight into your life under lockdown and with the hashtag Bose and you could be winning those headphones. But for now, thank you so much for your company. It's been great to have you and we'll speak again soon. Stay home, stay safe and stay connected.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.